Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Good evening, good morning, good night, good second breakfast, whenever you are, wherever you are. My name is Laura Gonzalez, and I'd like to welcome you to Lunatic Monday, Lunes Lunaticos, the very first bilingual show for CSMP, the Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts. And tonight we have an amazing guest, a very talented person who writes a lot. They are a blogger, and oh my goodness, my utmost respect, because you know how I can talk, but I cannot write. And they write so much, and they write beautiful pieces of information for pagan and gender equality and whatever. But I want to read you their biography so I can quit ranting. Sydney Eileen is a non-binary, transgender, asexual, animistic, polytheist witch. They acknowledge divinity and unique natures in not just deities, but in all manner of ephemeral and supernatural beings, spirits, living beings, and the souls that embody the physical objects and spaces around us. Their practice is lifelong and of an intuitive nature, seeking fulfillment through mutable, asymmetrical balance. Their perspective as a witch and an artist influences everything they do. I am very happy to have them on the show today, and I'd like to welcome you, Sydney. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I am a little tired, because I had for the first time since COVID, I went out in nature, and I went to Woodhaven Lakes over the weekend. So I'm exhausted, because you know how you have a little vacation and then you need a vacation from the vacation?
Yeah.
That's where I am today. But how are you?
I'm doing good. Excited to be here and busy doing writing and got some ideas for what I'm going to be writing in the next few weeks, and I've got a setup so I can start trying to play with digital art, and got a lot of things going on.
That's good. Keep yourself busy, right? I mean, what else are we going to do in this pandemic times, and you know, with everything that is happening in the world, one can only hope to stay busy and continue busy and working for the community. You do a lot. I really, 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 really have a lot of respect by the amount of things that you write.
Because I
can talk, and a good friend of mine was asking me the other day, like, why are your podcasts on YouTube? And I'm like, because it's 10 years of formatting that I'm not doing. <You know? laughs> 10 years of podcasts that I will never put on a video form for YouTube. But I wonder if I ever wrote everything that crossed my mind. You know, it is, I really respect that. It's really interesting.
It's impossible to write everything that crosses my mind. That's never going to happen. There's just way too much. But I do like to keep myself busy and focused on something and always be working forward.
Mm-hmm. It is incredible. So for people that don't know, I learned about Sydney and I contacted them after I got across this gender diversity sigil that they created, and I find it fascinating. I think it's beautiful. is beautifully written, and how you broke it down and all the symbols that are in there. So is both your activism and your artistic mind put together in creating a symbol that is truly all-inclusive and all-encompassing. And I love that you also tell people, you know, go ahead and use it. I'm not going to be upset or whatever. But before we go and plunge into this diversity sigil, I would want to ask you, how did you know that you were a witch? How did you start it on the path of paganism, witchcraft, etc.?
Well, my partner introduced me to real life witchcraft and paganism when I was 19, and when we first met, because she is a witch and she was raised in a pagan environment, and that was part of her identity. And when we started talking and I explained how I perceived and interacted with the world, she went, "You're a witch." And I had never been introduced to even the concept that there were witches in a modern context. I had never been introduced to pagan religions. The closest I had been introduced to was the New Age movement, which has its issues, but so I was interested in alternative spiritualities because I never really clicked with the Christian upbringing that I was raised with. It really wasn't compatible with the experiences I lived. So I started calling myself a witch in my 20s, but the things that I do, I had always done, and the way I perceived the world was always part of my experience. So I can't really point to a particular event or a particular time and say that's when I became a witch. I can only say when I started using the label.
Mm-hmm. And that is fantastic that it was your partner that kind of like introduced you into that. And other than, because I love how you describe yourself as animistic, because every time I revisit those concepts, I kind of agree that everything has a spark of life and soul and life, you know.
Yeah.
Like even it's so funny because people look at, I don't know if it happens to you, but I talk to things and if I hit something, I say I'm sorry.
Oh, always.
Stuff
I
like
always
that.
Have. When first encountered the word animism in, I think, my early teens, and I was like, mm-hmm. that's what I do. Because my entire life, like going to different churches when I was a little kid, they always said only humans have souls. And I just looked at the world around me and went, I can tell that's not true. It was obvious to me that everything had a soul. I always could feel those and interact with them. And so once I found the label of animism, it was like, oh, yay, I'm not the only person in the world who notices this. It was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I really like that, to think that if everything was created by the same source, and everything has a little bit of that source within it, then everything is sacred and alive in a way, you know.
No,
and you can.
I don't think things,
you. Go ahead.
Sorry. I don't think things have to come from one source to have that. Like I very much blend scientific thinking and spiritual thinking in how I perceive the world, and I don't know where the universe came from. I don't know if there is a source. I don't think that's something I can ever determine in this life. And I know a lot of people do believe in that. And if it brings them peace, that's awesome. But I see things much more amorphously. And but everything does have a spark of the divine, because everything is both mundane and magical at the same time. Nothing is entirely mundane, and nothing is entirely, well, some things are entirely magical, but anything that's mundane also has magic in it, because it has energy and it has spirit and it has soul. So there's always mm-hmm. that to connect to.
Mm-hmm. That is fantastic. So as a child, you were doing like witchy things, but you didn't like consider yourself yet a witch, or you didn't know the concept?
Yeah. I didn't do the typical thing that I see a lot of other witches describing, where they create spells out of little trinkets that they find in the backyard. But I always was drawn to different objects and different things because of the energies that they had. I didn't really work spells per se,
mm-hmm.
But I always felt that connection, and I started doing meditation and spiritual exploration when I was probably only like 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. So I was more on that end of things than the I'm going to intuitively create a spell out of some pretty twigs and stones that I found in my backyard.
Mm-hmm. And how does that, because, you know, the thing with diversity, in my opinion, of course, there are very many experiences that I don't have and I don't understand.
Oh, yeah. Growing everybody
as a, has. As a, yeah, growing as a cisgender female or women, mm-hmm. There are many experiences that, of course, I don't understand, but how it is for a non-binary person, for an asexual transgender person such as yourself, how do you feel that you start identifying that way, and how does that combine or merges with your identity as a witch?
It is integrally connected to my development as a witch, because I was aware as a small child that I didn't feel like I was female. I, at the time, interpreted it to feel like I felt I could relate as much to men as I could to women. And I was always deeply thoughtful about that sort of thing, because it wasn't an experience that was reflected in the people around me, but there was no denying how visceral it was for me, which led me to contemplate things like gender and what actually were the differences between men and women, and how much of it was social construct and how much of it was actually inherent. And so I always contemplated those things because it reflected in my reality. When I was younger, I identified as bisexual because in modern nomenclature, I would probably be best categorized as a panromantic asexual who is not sex repulsed. So that means I am attracted to a lot of people, and gender has nothing to do with who I am and am not attracted to, which in the 90s led me to identify as bisexual. But I never had any desire for follow through.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the being non-binary, I mostly kept it to myself because I could see that people around me very much were immersed in the binary experience of male and female. And I didn't want to have to completely explain my reality every single time I talk to someone. And the kind of non-binary I am means that I would be just as comfortable in a male body as a female body. And I have no problem with being in this, the body I have, and I love it the way it is. And mm-hmm. so being put into that female role in society didn't bother me because everyone has roles that they end up in society. So I could just roll with it and not worry about it. But in conversations with friends, I was never in the closet. If the subject came up, I would talk about it with friends, but I didn't see the point in fighting with acquaintances and strangers and work environments going, no, I'm not a woman, even though I don't really consider myself a woman. So a couple years ago, when I saw that prevailing culture was shifting and that there were new terms that had been coined that could describe my experience of gender, because there weren't any when I was a kid. They just didn't exist. I knew what I was, but there were no words for it. So I looked into those and started getting more involved with trying to understand where these social pressures were going. And I decided, you know, a lot of these young people are being dismissed because people are going, well, this didn't happen a couple generations ago. You're just making it up. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, it did happen. We just didn't have the words for it. And we didn't have people who were willing to listen to us. So I felt that there might be value for other people like myself to be able to learn that there is this person in her 40s who has felt this way since she was a child. It's not a fad. It's not a weird thing. If you know, you know, and nobody else can tell you what you are. Only you can decide. And mm-hmm. your understanding can change over the course of a lifetime as you grow and change. And the reason I didn't realize that these words were being coined when they did get coined, because they've actually been around for quite a few years now, is because as a bisexual, I ran into constant bigotry and alienation and erasure when I did try to participate in the LGBT community in my youth. And that really turned me off. So I got my socializing through things like sewing and reenactment and other more interest-based things, and didn't really interact much with the LGBT community for a couple decades because of that erasure and alienation.
Mm-hmm. There is a lot of challenges that come, I believe, with those experiences that, you know, some of us don't have. And I love and I admire that you know, when I invited you, you said yes. I'm grateful for that.
And I'm delighted to be here.
Thank you. I appreciate it. If you see me a little spaced out for a minute here, is because we have trolls in the chat. There is actually a chat room. I don't know if you're able to connect to it or not. If not, don't worry about it. There's a couple of genuine questions in the chat, but then there was a couple of trolls. And to everybody in the chat room, just to remind you, don't feed the trolls. And sorry to the real trolls to call obnoxious people trolls. But don't feed the trolls, you know. Let's continue with this amazing conversation and forget about the people who are being obnoxious on the troll on the chat room. Apologize, Sydney. Going back to the experiences, yes, I remember coming out as back in the day when I discover or I find words to express the way I relate to other people. Heteroflexible was the one that fitted for me. And I remember mm-hmm. coming out to a lesbian person and to a bisexual person, and I got bashed. I got like, oh, you're one of those that teases lesbians, huh? And I was like, oh my God, let me close the door and go back inside the closet because that was very hurtful.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you and I and everybody else that has the courage to live the reality opened those doors back again and came out of the, you know, quintessential closet. But speaking of coming out of the closet, did you actually have to come out of the broom closet? Did you actually have to kind of like declare to people, hey, I'm a magical being, I'm a witch, et cetera? Did you have to go through that as well?
No, I never really had any coming. I never was in the closet. I didn't always talk about it with everyone that I encountered. But there is, I have never deliberately worked to hide who I am. I grew up in a home with a family that was emotionally abusive. And one of the things that came out of that is I am extremely triggered by lying, because they would cover their manipulations with lying continually. It was like breathing for them. And somehow I ended up with the with a very strong feeling that honesty was the most important thing that was connected to a person's integrity. So I actually find it very stressful to try and deliberately portion my life and try and hide things, because things that you hide can easily become lies. And I never wanted to be a liar like they were. And I know it really helps a lot of people to partition things and keep things private, and it doesn't do that. But with my background and the way I am and my experiences, I find it a lot easier to not be secretive or private. And just what you see is what you get.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's most of the time the best way to be, you know, like why hide or why, I mean, if it comes out, it comes out. And if somebody asks, it's close to the nationality thing, you know, like with BIPOC people, like we all get put in the same bag. And if somebody asks, because they are a smart cookie and they ask where I'm from, but I can see the intention is non-pleasant, I'm like, I will say Mars, you know, or planet Earth.
Yeah. No, I absolutely 100% agree with if you're in the closet because that is what you need to do to be safe, mm-hmm. or to handle the people that you have to be around in your life, absolutely stay there and do not let anyone shame you about it, because mm-hmm. you need to do what you need to do to handle your life. That just was never an answer for me, but it was never a safety issue for me either. My parents, they prided themselves on giving the impression of being open-minded and welcoming and stuff. So they absolutely would not have ever engaged in any activity that was overtly bigoted or discriminatory.
That is a wonderful thing to have. It is indeed. So, going to the writing, mm-hmm. when did you start writing and how did you get involved on writing for blogs?
Well, I actually, I've written tutorials on artistic and crafty things for years. That's most of what's on my website. Mm-hmm. because as I do projects, I like to share my processes and all of that with people, and it brings me a lot of joy and I enjoy teaching. But I hadn't really done much writing in a few years, as I hadn't been able to do many projects because of chronic illness. And mm-hmm. last summer in August, I finally decided I was going to write a book. And I'm working on it, and it's actually pretty close to being done, but it's not on paganism. It's about my family, because it was a step I needed to take to finish working through my trauma from my past. And mm-hmm. shortly before that, I had also started co-leading a monthly ritual at a local pagan occult shop. And so we were doing that, but the scheduling fell apart in September was the last time I did a ritual there. And I had started writing my book and I was enjoying doing something again because I hadn't been able to do much art in a few years. And so I decided, well, maybe to keep connected with the pagan stuff that I was working on and to keep up with the writing, I could start blogging. So I did a couple blogs on my SydneyEileen.com website, but I knew it was mostly read by people who were interested in my crafts and not my witchcraft. Most of them wouldn't even have been aware that I was a witch at the time because I wasn't broadcasting it. So I reached out to a friend who was blogging on Pathios and asked if she knew anything about how to start blogging on that site. And she got me in touch with the editor and I started contributing to the group blog in the end of October of last year. So my anniversary of starting with them will be in about a month. And then this past summer, I was offered the opportunity to have a solo blog on that platform. So that is where my articles are being posted now.
Wow. That is, you said it so like, like it just happened, but I can only imagine all the work that is behind it, you know? And man, again, because I'm a talker, so what I do is I talk and, you know, it's to write stuff. It's amazing. And I like blogs because, you know, it's not a book, but it's informative. And, you know, it's a couple minutes per article, and then you get a good feel of the author and the people and all that. Hey, Sydney, we're going to go into a break. And because today in Mexico, Central South America, and countries that speak Spanish, they are fighting for the decriminalization of the interruption of pregnancies and the right for people to decide. I will play a song that is on Spanish, and it's a song that talks about fighting for the rights of people. And yeah, I figure let's play that. It's about acceptance and the fight for the rights to exist as you are. And that comes from Audrey Funk. It's a little bit of a rap hip hop thing, but it's beautiful. And for those who understand, awesome. Those who don't, check Audrey Funk. You don't need to understand what she's saying. You just need to listen to her because she is awesome. Sydney, I will put you on hold for a minute while we listen to the song. And we will be back in about 2.5 minutes with more here with Sydney Eileen on Lunatic Mondays. Don't go anywhere.
Me dijeron que todo era culpa mía, que si me agredían fue la ropa que traía, obligada a esconder quién era, miedo todo el rato, ahí fuera. Me negaron desde nacimiento, vos, y ahora creen poseer mi cuerpo, dímelo, por favor. Ay, cómo no estar enojada, si están matándonos, he estado indiferente, nadie vio. No vandalizamos, ponemos el cuerpo. Nuestras vidas no me importan, no hay respeto. Vaya a ver las cifras, no le miento. Feminicidio más del 90%. Por eso pinta la pared. Es autodefensa, ayuda a no caer. Por eso pinta la pared. Es acción directa, sin retroceder. Por eso pinta la pared. Es autodefensa, ayuda a no caer. Por eso pinta la pared. Acción directa sin retroceder.
Sin retroceder. Sin retroceder. Sin retroceder.
Dicen sin aliento. Ni en la casa ni en la calle paz no encuentro. No más sufrimiento. Por eso manifiesto la rabia cuya fuerza viene desde el centro. Estas no son formas y demasiado violento. Salgan a la calle, manifestemos. Este es nuestro tiempo, no me importa momento. A quemarlo todo con este fuego interno.
Sin retroceder.
And we're back here live on Lunatic Mondays, Lunes Lunaticos, our very first bilingual show for CSN Podcast, the Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast. And I always say the first because there is a second bilingual show, a show on Saturdays that is called Paganos del Mundo, translated to Pagans to the World or Pagans of the World. And the shows on Paganos del Mundo are on Spanish and Portuguese. So on October 3rd, Cristina Ortiz will be talking about decretos y programaciones. October 10, Carolina Amor, Rueda del Año 3, the Wheel of the Year 3. October 17, Harwood Tuileva with Tartessos, La Civilización Perdida. And October 24th, Patricia Finclair will be interviewing Leoni Maura. There is also more Lunatic Mondays and Lunes Lunaticos. Amazon Wine, The Tao of Healing, etc., etc., etc. And on October 26th, I will be interviewing Phyllis Carruth, and she will be talking about the Witch's Wisdom Tarot, a very new, very special, very unique tarot deck that she created. And she's going to be telling us all about it on October 26th. On October 5th, for those who speak Spanish, we will be with Ness Bosch talking about chamanismo, shamanic practices, that is going to be in Spanish. And of course, we're going to have the astrology with Monica Gobin. And for those who follow Selena Fox on Nature Mystics, she will have on October 4th, Stories of the Veteran Pentacle Quest. October 11th, Circle Cemetery and Greening Life's End. October 18th, Samhain Altars. October 25th, Outer World Samhain Rite. And on November 1st, Samhain Divination for the Future. But that is not all. She has a second show called, let me find it. Here it is, Nature Spirituality. And on Nature Spirituality, on October 7th, she will be talking about Samhain Magic. On October 14th, Honoring Ancestors. October 21st, Witches. October 28th, Spirits of the Dead. We also have, of course, two Tuesdays a month. We have Circle Talk with Deborah Rose. October 6th, she's going to be talking with Reverend Charlotte Baer. And the 2 weeks later, she's going to be talking to Dre, one of the ministers, part of the ministers in training program. And of course, we also have Moon Magic two Thursdays a month with Janet Ewan. So there is a lot of programming for CSMP for you to learn, listen, download, share, and everything is free. You can listen to it. I used to say there was 200 hours of archive podcasts. By now, there's 300 hours of archived podcasts. So you can go download, listen, share, listen again, keep it on your phone, keep it in. I mean, it's a video podcast. You don't have to be sitting looking at it. You can just put your headphones and go about your merry way and your merry day. But we're back here with Sydney Eileen. And Sydney, welcome back to Lunatic Mondays. How are you, hon?
Hi, doing good.
Okay, cool. So I was going to ask you because, oh my God, you have no idea how I love art and I love artists. Like, really, 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 I'm a geek. I really, really get all like goofy about art and artists. So when I see people who perform, act, sing, dance, whatever, mm-hmm. you know, because I'm seeing the divine through you. I'm seeing the divine created through humans, through people who create art. So when I saw your gender diversity sigil, I was like all goo gaga about it. And some of the things you said here on the blog, this is a sigil for gender diversity, acceptance, and inclusion in pagan and magical spaces, community rituals, and workings. This has been magically charged with the intent for learning. Listen to this, folks. Learning, welcome, and community, crossroads and bridges, inclusion and full acceptance, open to other perspectives, words against hate and bigotry. Don't we all need that? Yes, we
yeah.
do. So the first thing I have to ask you is, how do you learn to type a sigil?
Laura Tempest Zakharoff, she published a book called Sigil Witchery, and it is one of the books that I recommend the most often. It's honestly the only occasion I can point to where I say I do something entirely by a method someone else taught me, because the way she approaches sigils is exactly perfect for how my brain works. So I read her book and went, why didn't I think of this? And just started running with it. And one of the keys to the way she approaches sigils is to very clearly lay out your intents, rather than just going, I want a sigil for gender diversity, acceptance, and inclusion. It's, okay, what does that mean? And so when I sat down to create this one, I went, okay, what that means is learning. We need to be willing to learn from each other and always be seeking to learn, because no matter what gender you are, no matter what sexuality you are, no matter what ethnicity you are, no matter where you come from, there's always something more to learn about the people around you and yourself, to be welcoming to other people of different perspectives who are not just exactly like you, to want to build a community around that acceptance of diversity, which requires crossroads and bridges, because we're all going different directions all the time. And so if we want to come together, we need to be able to build those bridges, and we need to be able to meet at those crossroads and to join with each other and learn from each other and carry some of that beauty with us as we continue on our paths. We need to be open to each other's perspectives, because no two people have exactly the same perspective. And diverse perspectives can provide ways to see things and view things that can open up whole new worlds. And then, of course, the necessary wards, because we live in tumultuous times and there are a lot of people who want to enforce homogeny. And I think that's a shame.
Mm-hmm. I just saw a commercial for the current, air quotes, president re-election, and all the discourse that they're using in this commercial, I'm like, my goodness, who is trying to be socialist? Nobody's trying to impose socialism in America. Oh my God, it's just so, the level of ignorance. And I think it was Einstein who said that people's ignorance is infinite. Well, he didn't say ignorance, he said stupidity. It's infinite. And my goodness, it is the truth. So yeah, I think protection is never extra. We always want to have protection, but also to have diversity, and also really, 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 really important, really, to have diversity on our pagan community, because I find it the most incoherent thing in the world to say that we are a nature-based practice, religion, or lifestyle, whichever label you like, that we see everything as sacred, but there is no asterisk at the end of that sentence. When everything is sacred, everything is sacred.
Yeah.
No exclusions. And to have people in the pagan community having exclusions. Now, Sydney, you don't know this fact, but I started doing gender diversity shows on Lunatic Mondays because about 3 years ago, somebody was a bigot to one of my gay friends publicly. This is a pagan public personality, you know, a person that,
yeah.
you know, working. And they were being a bigot. And somebody tagged mm-hmm. me to kind of like give my two cents. And I'm like, I'm not going to be arguing with people on Facebook because I simply do not have the time for that. But mm-hmm. I have a microphone. So let me do a show about it. And that
yeah.
became a series. And we have done, I think this is our, today, it's probably our 8th or maybe 10th show on gender diversity. And I cannot believe that it's 2020 and we still have to explain to people that nobody is trying to erase anybody, that there is enough cake for everybody. And the only thing we're modifying is the language. How
yeah.
wrong am I, Sydney? Mm-hmm. give us your two cents.
Unfortunately, I think this is a fight that we are going to be fighting for a very long time. It's not going to end this year. It's not going to end next year. But as long as we continue to fight, we can eventually get there. It tends to be the people who go, oh, you're trying to erase me, are actually the ones who are trying to erase everyone who isn't like themselves. And part of the point of Wards Against Hate and Bigotry is if you allow people into a space who are advocating for hate and bigotry and racism and xenophobia and all those things, then you are, they become like a cancer. Once they get in there, they alienate people, they drive people away, and suddenly they're the ones who are occupying the entire space.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be proactive about keeping people out who want to destroy unity and diversity and individuality, because if you don't, they will destroy all of your hopes and dreams.
Mm-hmm. Why is it that some people who, in your opinion and to your knowledge, of course,
mm-hmm.
People who are cisgender women believe that it's not cool to speak about pleasure, clitoris, vulva, vagina? Why do they think, oh, we cannot talk about our body parts and our body's pleasure anymore? Where does that idea come from? Because I have yet to find any of my transgender or non-binary friends to come and tell me, Laura, don't talk about your body and don't talk about your body's pleasure. Where does this idea come from?
It's a leftover and a legacy from patriarchal European culture, because if you can control people's bodies, you can control them. And you don't talk about that sort of thing in like 100 years ago or 200 years ago, because if you don't talk about it, your people are coming together in a marriage that societally they're supposed to stay in for the rest of their life. The women usually had not as much choice about who they married as they should have, or at least they ended up married so young they didn't know what they actually wanted or needed. And so by controlling it and putting shame on it, it reinforced the patriarchal idea of you are the property of your husband and you need to just deal with it. And that has held over into the current era, because if you don't talk about those things, then people who are abusive and manipulative can maintain control, because that means that their victims don't have recourse. And that's it gets back to a lot of things along those lines. And then with bigotry, it factors into it, because if you don't talk about it as being something that's empowering and individualizing, then, and you're not allowed to talk about that, then they can enforce bigoted ideas and there's nothing to contradict that in the common discourse. Or if you're transgender, you're not allowed to talk about it, which means they can pretend you don't exist. So the not talking about it is enforcing societal norms of a cishet society, a cisgendered heterosexual normative standard for society. And everybody suffers when that sort of standard is upheld. You don't have to be transgender to suffer because of these kinds of standards. You can be a cisgendered straight woman and end up not knowing how to figure out what makes you happy. And so you end up settling for things. And so really everyone suffers under that kind of a system.
Mm-hmm. I believe, and of course I do not have the experience of a transgender woman or a non-binary woman, but I believe that once we start getting on board of changing the language, we will start understanding this a little bit better.
Yeah.
Is that a simplistic way of seeing things, or do you think that's the right track?
That's extremely accurate, because language is how we understand things. All of labels are about language and communication. And if we don't have the words for things, we can't communicate about them effectively. So we need those words to be able to communicate with each other and share our common experiences, especially for people who are part of more marginalized groups who don't necessarily know very many or any people in person who can share their experiences. And it creates a sense of commonality and a relief of, I'm not crazy. I'm not all alone. There are other people who do experience this sort of thing, or maybe this exact thing. So we need those words and we need that language. And I think it's amazing and a really good sign for the future that there are so many new terms that are being created to help to communicate these less common experiences of what it means to be human. And a lot of that is being driven by younger generations than myself. And I think that shows really promising things for the future.
I agree, because I remember when I first heard of, you know, like I was saying earlier, when I self-identify as heteroflexible, even for me, that sounded a little like, yeah, whatever. But when I learned the term queer and what it actually means to be queer, that you're rejecting standards for whatever perceived gender you were born with, I'm like, I am totally queer, because to this day, God bless my mother's soul wherever she is, the way I'm sitting with my legs open, she will be like, sit like a girl, and I'll be like, it's not comfortable, Mom, I have a big stomach and it's on the way, I need to sit with my legs open, you know. That doesn't make me less of a person, but that little, as little as that, as I'm sorry, I cannot English, as little as that is to sit, quote unquote, sit as a lady, I never abide by that, you know. And I am a cisgender woman, but I don't like to sit with my legs closed. I'm sorry, people. I'm sorry, universe.
Yeah.
I always sit with my legs open, you know, quote unquote, like a guy. But that's so silly, you know, and that is just a tiny little part of it. I don't have kids. I never wanted to birth children. So there's so many things that I don't fit the standard. So when I discover queer, I'm like, that's me. I like that.
It's anyone who defies standard cultural and societal norms can be considered queer, as far as I'm concerned.
But there is no standardized amount of relationships that you have to have with people of other genders to be considered fill the blank.
No, it's
correct?
Something only you can decide. No one else can tell you are or are not queer. That if you want that label, that that is absolutely a label you have to decide for yourself, because you are the only one who is inside your head living your life.
Mm-hmm. There are so many there are so many parallels with the nationality and ethnicity, you know, because mm-hmm. I feel that by definition, I'm Mexican, so all of us Mexican should consider ourselves Native Americans because we are native to this land.
Mm-hmm.
And even though the colonizers tried to steal and kill our soul and our traditions and whatnot, a lot of us are reclaiming the word Native American. And then it's funny because people in Central and South America say, oh no, the natives are only the Sioux or the Apache and whatnot. And I'm like, no. Every person born on native land are native. And, you know, to have found a dear friend from Argentina the other day telling me, but you're not native. I'm like, you cannot tell me what I am, honey. You know, you do you, boo. That's my favorite phrase, Sydney. You do you, boo.
I like that.
You know,
that's all any of us can do.
Yeah. And ultimately, that implies you do you and I do me.
Yeah.
You know, and you cannot tell me. So tell me, because time is flying, it's already 7:52. Speaking of creating new language for us to understand everything, you wrote a blog about people who have, how do you put it, own uterus? And
uterus owners. That caused controversy.
Tell me, give us a little teaser about the article and the controversy.
Okay, the article was titled Menstrual Magic for Uterus Owners of All Genders, because some people are born with a uterus and some people aren't, and that may or may not have any relation to what gender you are. But if you have a functioning uterus that has a period, you can engage in menstrual magic. You don't have to be female to do that. So I wanted to be explicitly gender inclusive because I'm not a woman, but I have a uterus and I can do menstrual magic. And there are transgender men who still have their uteruses who don't necessarily want to go through the surgeries to remove them, who can also do that sort of magic. Lots of non-binary people. So I wanted to be explicitly inclusive. And of course, the gender essentialists came out to play because that directly flies against their idea of uterus equals woman and penis equals man. I got no end of comments of, you know, sorry to tell you this, but if you have a uterus, you're a woman. I'm like, no, I'm not. I didn't bother arguing with any of them because honestly, if somebody says something like that, they're not looking to be educated. They're just looking to troll. So I just deleted the comments in the places where I could. The controversy I didn't expect was with people who were uncomfortable being called a uterus owner, even though they were fine with the gender inclusion. Where they felt like they weren't allowed to be an owner of a part of their body, or that they weren't allowed to take that ownership, or they felt like it was objectifying to refer to them as uterus owners. And I had a couple discussions with some different people about that. And I do have a blog post that I've been working on that actually will go into body ownership in a little bit more mm-hmm. detail. But basically the idea is your body is yours. You're not, whether you consider it borrowed from wherever or a temporary vessel, it is yours. You are the only person who has it from the day you're born until the day you die. No one else can use it after you. There's not another human that is going to inhabit your body and walk around and experience life in it after you die. It is wholly yours. And if you can claim ownership of your body, that is extremely empowering because it is an integral part of your experience in this life. Whether you believe in one life or reincarnation and multiple lives, it is how you interact with the physical world. And the aspects of it that are purely physical impact how you interact with the world. So like, say you are prone to chronic depression, like chronic clinical depression, or if you're neural atypical or neurotypical or whatever sex organs you do or don't have, or whatever gender you are, these things are part of your physical experience in this life. And that in a large part shapes how you interact with the world. So if you can claim ownership of that, it is extremely empowering for claiming your true self and being your happiest, most complete person.
Mm-hmm. The body is the sacred space of our life and our consciousness. I mean, it has to be celebrated and it has to be yours. And as you remember me mentioning about the right to interrupt a pregnancy earlier, that is the whole premises of that, is your body. I am utterly surprised that that was what some folks might have had an issue with. And I applaud your quick reaction to write about it. And I thank you for that also, because people who are designated female at birth usually are taught that they don't own their body.
Exactly.
And that is the root of so very many of our troubles now.
Yeah, it is.
I.e. patriarchy.
I mean,
the whole patriarchal rhetoric bases itself in women being objectified. So I believe when a woman, whether trans or cis, or when a person of any gender reclaims the right of ownership and agency of their own body, it is an empowering thing. And yes, my uterus is mine. I own it.
Yeah, the same way
I own my hair and I cut it if I feel like.
Yeah. One of my cis female friends, when I posted on my Facebook going, oh my gosh, people are having issue with this and I didn't expect it, she said, what? I am a cis female and I decided I didn't want it. And like anything else you own, you decide you don't want, I got rid of it. She had really bad endometriosis, but she also knew she never wanted to have kids. So she did jump through the massive hoops you have to. It took her years, but she got rid of it. Because if you own something and you don't want it, you can get rid of it.
Yep. And it is ridiculous that in 2020, people still have to go through so very many hoops to get rid of. And I understand the medical implications and this and that, but if I am willing to take the risk, I don't even want to go the rabbit hole of fat phobia, but it's easier to get your stomach cut in half than it is to get rid of a uterus for whatever reason. It is so ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, and the justifications they give are awful. Like, oh, you might want to have kids, or your husband might want to have kids. No.
This is my new joke, and I am going to say it because I've been repeating it a lot lately, so I'm going to trademark this one as well. You give me a rotten tomato, and I can trace the history of that rotten tomato and tell you why and how patriarchy is the cause of the rotten tomato. Meaning all of the things that are bad with the world are because patriarchy.
It's a big problem. I don't know if it's everything, but yeah, it definitely factors into everything.
it
does factor in.
Yeah, it does definitely. It is 8 o'clock, Sydney. So I am going to ask, I'd rather talk to you for another minute and give you information than play a song, really. Where can people find your articles? Where they can find you? how can people come and contact with you and your work?
Okay, well, if they want to get notifications about everything that I do, they'll want to go to my website and sign up for blog notifications. And that even includes, I post there when I submit new articles to Pathios. And that is at sydneyeileen.com, SIDNEYEILEEN.com. And then my blog on Pathios is The Balancing Path. So that's pathios.com/blogs/thebalancingpath, all as one word.
Awesome. Thank you very much for being here today. Thank you for joining the ranks of the gender diversity shows here on Lunatic Mondays. I miss
My pleasure.
Doing one. I haven't done one in a while, and it was just a delightful night to have you here and talk about this so important part of our activism. And yes, folks, feminism is inclusive. I cannot remember the word. It's inclusive and not compartmentalized, but the other word. Anyway, you know what I mean.
Feminism is completely gender inclusive, and it's about equality and equal access for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. I blanked on the word that I was trying to use, and now the wonderful outing for a show that I had is gone. But what I'm trying to say is feminism is inclusive and diverse, and we don't exclude. So those people that are out there calling themselves exclusive feminists, please leave the feminist part of your vitriol. And I say they should be called trans-exclusive radical garbage.